Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I just made some tea.
As did I. What a coincidence.
Tea update. Welcome back to the Tea Cast, everybody. The tea addict, the tea enthusiast.
Tea. No, I got nothing. Tea mold? Tea mold.
Tea mold. Yep. You know, this week on Upgrade, Mike asked me what my coverage plans were for the Apple event next week. And I think if you listen to that episode, I answer it as if I actually had some idea of what they were, but I don't.
this is exclusive content right
yeah.
here.
Yeah, it's behind the scenes. Now you know that there is
literally nothing behind the scenes.
When
Mike, you know.
Mike asked, yeah, nope, there's nothing back there. Just my cat. I don't know. You're not going to be there, so you could be like watching the stream and stuff.
Which I probably will.
I always have this struggle, which is, and I've talked about it on podcasts before, for me, the platonic ideal of a keynote attendance is John Gruber. He sits there with a paper book, like a little field notes or a moleskin and a pen, and he writes some things down. And that's it. And he pays attention. Of course, you and I, our history at Apple events is frantically typing whatever is going on and taking pictures and uploading files and communicating back to the newsroom about what's going on. And then there's John Gruber. He's just sitting there with a pen. So
yeah, I'm not going to lie. You know, I thought about pressing a little bit harder to see if I could get an invitation to this event. I mean, I think, honestly, when I think about it, it's mainly, there are two reasons to go for me. One, it's really nice to get the hands-on time that you get.
Like
there's basically
be,
no replacement for that.
Everybody who goes to the event may be the only people to handle that new iPhone for a month or two, right? Because it may not ship right away. It may be constrained.
And that's, you know, good for content, but also good for my own satisfaction of being able to, like, think about things and actually have a hands-on experience with that. But
say your satisfaction in lording it over everyone else, but
that's
the other way.
That's extra. But the thing about that is there are so many outlets now that are going to be there and, like, covering all that stuff that, you know, I'd like to think I can bring something new and fresh and different, but after you've read 50 of those stories, I'm not sure how much more there is to get out of it. So
there's not that much time in the hands-on area, and every
really
product is controlled by a handler who has talking points. It's very hard to shake something
new out. And you got to jostle for room because everybody wants the hands-on time.
Ugh,
so, I mean, curious to see what the new setup is like. That's the other reason, or another reason, is to see this new setup since this is the new campus. That's very exciting. I would love to be able to see that, but, you know, that's like a nice but not, like, crucial. And the other thing is to, like, see people and, you know, catch up with people who I don't get to see very often, and also to get time to, like, interact face to face with people at Apple, right? Like, those are good things. And, like, you know, I thought about that, and I thought about pressing harder and being like, yeah, it would be good for me to go. And then I thought about flying out and turning around and flying back again within probably 48 hours.
Yeah.
And I thought, that sounds awful.
$100 and a quick turnaround. And yeah.
I'm not as young as I used to be, and I'm feeling more like, oh, God, I traveled so much in the past month or two anyways that I'm just
true.
Like, I'm okay. I'm going to sit. Ironically enough, I have a dentist appointment in the morning. I'm going to come back. Hopefully that will have gone fine. And I'm going to sit down on my couch and watch it on my Apple TV. And probably I'll be tweeting some stuff. You know, probably be tweeting on the Six Colors live event account.
I think on Six Colors events, I think that'll be where you'll be.
I'll probably be tweeting some stuff on my own account, too.
Sure,
you know,
always.
Like, this is
that unique Dan Warren flavor. Midway through the event, your Apple TV is just going to unplug itself from the TV and hurl itself to the floor as it's made obsolete by a new, fancier Apple TV. Or not.
Yeah, well, I mean, although, like you, I don't have a 4K HDR TV, so it's going to be like, meh.
Yeah,
it's still, what would you replace this for? So I don't know, but, like, sitting on your couch and watching an Apple event, there's something to be said for that.
Yeah.
It is pretty relaxing.
It's not quite Gruber with his book.
No,
pen,
it's not.
But it's close. Yeah, so
I'm never going to be Gruber with his book and pen.
So
That's just not me.
My gut feeling is that what I'm going to do is take some pictures. Because pictures are good to have, not just at the time where you're like, you know, here's what the new campus looks like and here's what the new theater looks like. But it's useful archivally. Like, later I can use those pictures when I'm writing about the event. I can say, well, here's Tim Cook on stage and stuff like that. So I probably do that. And I'll probably do some tweeting a little bit, but not a lot. I'm going to try to take it easy. I'm going to try to do more, you know, what I've tried to do the last couple times, which is spend a little more time thinking about what they're saying and a little less time relaying what they're saying, other than the highest high points, because that's the one advantage of being in the theater, right? Is that I get to spoil everybody who's watching on the stream.
Right. Because you're
breaking
like
the news a minute
30
early.
30 seconds ahead or a minute ahead. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that is an advantage. But, you know, at the end of the day, 30 seconds to it. It used to be, as we've discussed before, used to be that was the only way to get any information was to follow a live blog. But those days are long gone.
Yeah, no more.
So we shall hold on to them as a vestige of our nostalgic past.
Yeah, but really the most important stuff, you know, is getting the hands-on afterward. And otherwise, the technology has pretty well leveled the playing field.
So
because you can sit there on your couch and watch it happen.
I know. I could be in my pajamas. I can be having a snack.
It depends on what your dentist feels about both of those things.
That's true. So we'll see how it goes. But I think it'll be fun. I'm interested to see. It sounds like this could be kind of jam packed. So I'm interested to see what this is going to look like.
Stephen Hackett did a piece on his website about whether he thought there'd be a second event, because sometimes there's a second event, an Echo event in October, and he reached the same conclusion I did, which is I don't think so, because there are no new Macs.
There's nothing left
to announce. There's only the shipping of the iMac Pro. There's no new iPads to announce. They did that already too. Like I feel like there's nothing left except HomePod, which they already announced, and then the Apple TV and the Apple Watch. But like, Apple seems very comfortable announcing those things at the same event as the iPhone. It's not all about the iPhone. So
doubting that the Apple TV announcement will take more than a few minutes, like, you know, maybe 10 at the outside, because I think it's just going to be 4K HDR.
But it's 2 hours. I mean, they're not going to spend an hour and 30 minutes on the iPhone, right? They want other stuff in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think that... Let's put it this way. It's not so big that they couldn't fit it into that event very comfortably.
Not having the iPad and Mac announcements kicking around, I don't see how there's another event. I feel like they've done everything else. They've updated everything or announced, right? You know, the HomePod, there's not going to be a big Apple event probably saying, hey, the HomePod shipped, right? That's not what they do. That's a shipping announcement is not... You know, it's not to say they might not hold an event. I wouldn't put it past them to do something weird where they invite people down to like listen to the HomePod or something again, because they've been weird about that. But my guess is that wouldn't be a big media event. They just invite people down. So I think this is it. I think this is it's been a busy calendar year for Apple, and this is the last the last set of refreshes that they want to do to get into the holidays. And then, you know, we won't hear from them again, I suspect, in terms of a big media event until sometime in the spring.
Yeah, at the earliest.
Yeah, I think so. But I'm looking forward to it. So I always have that moment of like, I don't want to sound. It is an incredible privilege to go to the event, but my feelings about it are always tempered with the fact that for those of us for whom this is work, it's a lot of work. It's like a very busy time. I'm anticipating. I'm writing a bunch of stuff now, but I'm also anticipating all the stuff that. Like, you know, Tuesday is going to be a very long day, and Wednesday is going to be a very long day, and Thursday and Friday. These are the days where I get up, roll out of bed, come out to the office, and I'm writing until basically I go to sleep, which is at 2 p.m. I pass out at my keyboard, and then I wake back up and write some more. I stay here until 11:00 at night. And I mean, it's just that's just what it is. And I'm not boohooing it. It's just like that's just the nature of our job, is that this is the high season. And so I've got that in the back of my mind, which is like there's nothing I can do about it now, or very little I can do about it now to mitigate it. Right. It's going to happen. And then you do it, and it's great because there's lots to write about, but it happens in such a compressed... We've talked about this before. It's like, boy, wouldn't it be nice if these announcements got strung out over the course of like a month or two, because we get to spend time a week a piece deep diving into all of them. The nice thing about that high-end phone potentially being delayed is that actually does spread out the announcement a lot, and having the HomePod be in December spreads that out a little bit. Imagine if they were all shipping the Friday after the event. That would be
right.
so compressed, and it's like impossible to cover it all. I'm hoping the Mac, I'm actually hoping High Sierra gets delayed. I've heard, I don't know if there are rumors about it being delayed as much as that the people who are spending a lot of time with the beta say that it is not in as good a shape as iOS 11 is. And I kind of hope that they announce that High Sierra is going to ship later, like ship in October or something like that, because again, sort of spreads it out and lets all these products get a little more time on their own to be covered, instead of, it's just so easy to miss stuff, or as a reader or a writer, if it's all dropped at once.
Right, right. I mean, and they already said, I believe, didn't they say that the iMessage in the cloud feature,
that's not
going to
even be in the shipping versions of the operating systems. That's just going to be later in an update. Yeah, even though they announced it, it's just not ready, which is fine.
So yeah, that's fine. Again, no problem to spread things out a little bit.
No, no. So yeah, it's all coming. I did write my iOS 11 review. I finished my first draft of my iOS 11 review. Now, you know, Federico Vittici has been working all summer on his iOS 11 review. I imagine that it's going to be upward of 20,000 words. I will. I can exclusively report that Macworld asked me to write an iOS 11 review this year. 1,500 words.
Hey, you know what? I think you can say everything you need to say in 1,500 words.
I gave them 2,200 words.
Brevity is the soul of iOS reviews.
I gave Roman 2,200 words. I literally, and they are contained paragraphs that are like, there's also lots of other interesting stuff like this and this. And I have a whole section that is, which I think is actually, when the philosophy of iOS reviews, the way I've structured it is, there's the stuff that you just can't miss. There's the stuff that you'll notice over time that you won't notice right away when you use it. And there's stuff that's like the iPad stuff, which is very obvious, but only on an iPad. The stuff that will take time is interesting because it's... I've got another section in there too. It's like the subtle changes, but subtle changes that you notice over time. And then there's like the incompletes if you're doing a grade report. And I think this is one of the things that people don't talk about as much and should about iOS, is like a lot of the features of iOS are fully formed when the OS ships, but some of them are like, it's like a starting gun when the OS ships. So like ARKit.
Yeah.
Is
that's a technology that stuff's going to be built on.
Right. And there'll be apps at launch day that use ARKit, but it's going to take a while before we really get a sense of who's doing what with ARKit and how that works. Files app is another good example where Files app is dependent, I mean, not for iCloud, but for all the other services, those services need to ship apps that work with the Files app. Are they going to be there on day one? Maybe some of them, maybe not. But that's going to come later. It's certainly not somebody who's been using it all summer. I can judge because right now there's nothing, right? There's no publicly
available.
It's basically
just an iCloud Drive replacement.
It's just
right
iCloud
now.
Drive. And then AirPlay 2 I'd actually throw into that category too, yep. Which is like, it's a new technology. Great. What is it for? We don't have anything. It's going to take time. So, you know.
That was on my list of things in my Macworld column last week, which were technologies I wanted to hear more about because we haven't really gotten the details about AirPlay 2.
Yeah. So those are going to be the incompletes. So I did do a section of my review that's like, these things are also in this, but I can't judge them right now. But, you know, not to give it away. I mean, also, I haven't even taken the screenshots for that story yet because is the latest beta that came out this week the final? We don't know. We don't actually know. Maybe. It might be.
Yeah.
This could be the last build, but I don't know. So I do think that iOS 11, the big picture of iOS 11, I'm really impressed with it. Like, I think it is one of the most ambitious iOS updates Apple's done in a long time. And I think it's pretty good. Like, I think as marginal as High Sierra is, where there's kind of nothing, there's a lot in iOS 11, and I think it's generally pretty great.
Yeah, I agree. I have spent a long time now with my iPad and a shorter time on my iPhone, and I'm still finding things here and there or having other people mention things here and there. And it's it is always feeling like there's still part of the story untold, which is, you know, an interesting situation to be in when you're still waiting for hardware that accompanies some of this stuff, or you're waiting to see how these things work together with multiple devices running on the system, or when third-party developers add stuff to their apps that supports features in here. So, you know, it's only part of the story.
It unfolds over time. But like Control Center is a good example. Like, it took me a little bit to accept it, but especially on the iPhone, it's like, I love the new Control Center. There's so much you can do from it. It's customizable. Everything is accessible pretty quickly, including you're now playing, because it's right on there. You don't have to swipe to another page, and you can very quickly pause or next track or select an audio, because there's in the upper right-hand corner, there's like a little external audio thingy that if you touch there, it'll very quickly let you change where the audio is going to AirPods or wherever. You know, there's just so much. All of it is 3D touchable on iPhones, almost all of it. Some buttons don't have it, but so many do, and they pop up with controls like I like the sliders for the volume and the brightness, and there's one that when you tap on the flashlight, instead of having you pick like from a menu,
low, medium, high,
it's got a slider, and the slider only has a couple of steps because there's a limit to what
timer,
you can do with it.
The timer, basically.
You can tap to open the timer up immediately, and you 3D touch, and you pick a time. It's just, you know, it's a very well thought out thing that will take some getting used to, but I think it's really good. And the fact that it's customizable is just amazing. The screen recording stuff is going to be big, and there's APIs for that. I posted a link the other week that, you know, a bunch of support and I think streaming apps have announced that this is like part of a replay kit. So basically, like capturing a Mac screen and streaming it to Twitch, or looking at a Mac screen when you're trying to do tech support. You can't do control. It's not like you can take control of somebody's iPad. But if you're a tech support person, or I suppose this will probably run down to apps that, you know, you could put on some tech not savvy relative's device, and know that they could then, like, you can then look at their screen and they can explain what they're doing, and you could see it. Like, now you can do all of that.
I think the guys at Adovia who do screens would have to be working on something takes advantage of those.
Yeah, I just don't know how you, because you can't control, it's just view. But
it would be nice to be able to view.
Yeah, nice.
For viewing remotely an iOS screen, which has basically been impossible, other than connecting it to a computer, that it's a huge advantage. And for tech support, like you say, like, that's the biggest thing. Is my mom calls me and is like, oh, I've got this weird thing on my iPhone. Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? I'll look at it next time I'm there, because there's nothing else I can do.
My mom does that. And it's like, I don't even know what you're saying. Like, what are you seeing? Yeah. And sort of even just be able to see it would be nice. And that and so that's in there. So there's just there's a lot in there. And then there's all the iPad stuff, which I think is transformative. I mean, I think in the review I say something like, look, if you have an iPad, install this immediately. Like, I mean, if you have an iPhone, you probably install it immediately too. Who are we kidding? But the iPad, it's so great. And it's not perfect. Like, there's some the multitasking stuff. Yeah, there's some criticism, but Federico and Fraser Spears and a few other people have talked about CGP Grey and Mike about like some of the quirks of the multitasking. Like, CGP Grey likened my suggestion that that app should be able to stay with their buddies. Mm-hmm. And he says it's like a genie wish that it's like now they all have buddies and they must always have buddies. And I get how you might want to pair apps with different apps and all of that. I get it, but I feel like Apple made the decision that sort of like gets the best for everybody without adding so much complications and so much complexity that it is hard. If it doesn't make sense, it's like that's a tough line to walk of like what's flexible enough without being confusing, you know, confusingly complex. And I gotta say, I get what people who are kind of criticizing some of the details of Apple's implementation for multitasking on iOS, I get what they're saying. But I kind of think Apple made the right call. Like, to add more complexity at this point, I think would be a mistake. I think this is a good step. I would love for Apple to have a much more complicated windowing manager something in iOS eventually. But, like, is this the time for that? I think not. I think getting apps to like I'm very happy that I can pair apps together, and then when I switch away and come back, the pair comes back. That's great. Even though, yes, occasionally you're swiping something in or swiping something out. So anyway, my point is, I think some of the stuff that I initially reacted to and I was like, wow, what are they doing here? After giving it a few weeks or a month, I start to see, oh, I see why they did it this way. Like, it starts to make sense. And that's a really good sign, because let me tell you, that doesn't always happen.
No, there's a lot of times it just gets more questions.
Yeah, you're like, what? Well, I mean, the old multitasking thing, there were lots of things, like that thing you had to scroll through with all the icons on it. Like, at the moment that it popped up, I was like, what is this thing? And then 2 years later, it was still...
Like, I can't wait to get rid of this
thing. Right? But iOS 11 has aged pretty well in the betas for me.
I've really liked the one thing that I think was confusing, but they made some tweaks to make it less confusing, was the new lock screen.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
I actually really like it. And it's because the other day, for example, I got a New York Times alert, and I was like, oh, that looks interesting. And I think it might have been on my watch. Anyway, regardless, I looked and it cleared from the lock screen.
Yeah.
And then
so
I was like, oh, crap. I actually kind of went to read that. But you could just, I scrolled up and it was in the notification center for like all the stuff I got before. I was like, oh, that is perfect. That's exactly what I want. Because otherwise, it used to disappear and I'd be like, yeah, maybe I did it by accident, or maybe I didn't quite like see it. And it could have been like, oh my God, has World War III started or something? Like, I want to read that.
I can't tell you how many times I lost something on the lock screen and then I can't find it in Notification Center. I'm like, where, what the hell was that? Where did it go? And now I feel like they're unified. Like, they're the same. There's a history. On the lock screen, you can actually scroll up and see previous notifications.
Right.
And then you can also pull down from Notification Center and see all of those notifications. They don't vanish into the ether. I think there's, you know, by unifying them, they've also kind of done away with this concept that they disappear in some places and not in others. They kind of stay around a little bit more, which is good. I always got frustrated by that. So I think that's big. I think it's great. They made some changes to make it clearer that you're in the notification center and not the lock screen when your phone is unlocked or your iPad is unlocked. But that's another one of those features that, having seen their tweaks and also having lived with it for a little while, I really like it. I think it's like way more notification bubbles are way more useful because they're more reliable.
Yep. I entirely agree.
And this feeds into something that we talked about last week and that I wrote a column about this week, which is what happens when you tap on a notification bubble. Because you know, in iOS 10, you tap on a notification bubble and there's this like, but your phone's locked, so I can't do anything. And maybe you put Touch ID and then maybe it opens, or does it not? And it's unlocked, but it doesn't go where it was because I always got frustrated. It was like, what's the right sequence here? Do I lay my thumb on the button so it unlocks and then I tap the bubble and then it opens the app? And if I do it in any other sequence, it doesn't work. iOS 11, like, you tap the bubble and it puts a big thing that says, Touch ID, please, and I'll open this thing.
Right,
and
exactly.
You touch, and it goes, and here's what you want, which is like, oh my God, so much better. But it also dovetails with what we talked about last week about the new iPhone, if it's got Face ID, which is, you know, you want to have a better flow from the lock screen to the apps, whether you've got Touch ID or Face ID or something else. And they obviously thought about all of that, because in the end, what's the point in having touchable notification buttons if they don't do anything unless the phone's unlocked and you probably didn't unlock the phone? With Face ID, maybe it's always unlocked. Basically, when your face is looking at that bubble, it's unlocked, so it's fine. But for the rest of us with Touch ID, it's way better now. So, there's just a lot of that stuff that I've really... I've just been using it, and then when I came to boil it down to this small review, I just came away thinking, this is really good. They did a really good job. It's a very good update.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've been constantly impressed with the parts of it that keep popping up.
HomeKit, too. I use the HomeKit
stuff
all the time, too.
Yeah, same here. It's more accessible now, I think. it just feels there are some sneaky things in there. They actually addressed something that I had complained about in a previous Six Colors piece, which is the ability to set timers that go off at a certain time before sunrise or sunset or after sunrise and sunset.
Oh yeah,
like I didn't even know that was in there, and then a reader was like, oh yeah, they can do this now, and I'm like, what? Because it's totally not exposed or mentioned. Like it takes a little work to find, but like little yeah. stuff, you know, I'm still finding it.
Yeah, and I use those. I mean, that's the thing, is I actually use that logic because I want the front lights in my house, I would like to come on in the morning and go off at sunset in the morning and go off at sunrise or like 10 minutes before sunrise. And likewise in the evening, I like them to go on a little after sunset and then stay on to a certain time.
And I like my office light to go on before sunset because by sunset, it's too dark already.
Right? And if you set a before and after sunset, you can also have it be it just completely slides through the year with those same bracketed numbers of when the sun
goes
down, which is
I don't have to reset it like on the old manual timer my family always had.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't think I've written about it, but I've really gotten into HomeKit now. I had my first smart home stuff was not HomeKit, like the LifeX bulbs and some of the like my Nest is not and obviously the Amazon Echo stuff is not. But most things now that do HomeKit also do all the other things. And so I got a couple of Philips bulbs, but then I got those Lutron Casita wireless light switches, which for me was like, here we go. This makes so much sense because now you don't need, because let's be honest, smart light bulbs, they're cool and all, but for most uses, probably having a smart switch that turns your light bulbs on and off is the right place to put the technology. And once I got that, and those are all HomeKit compatible, and that's been great because it's nice to have remote controllable lights and schedulable. When we used to have a weird like a timer thing and a code we put into our ceiling fan in order to have like the lights come on when we're on vacation. Right. And you know, that's all gone now because I just tell the living room lights to come on in the evening and stay on until 11 o'clock and then turn off and walk away. And it's the normal lights and it's just a schedule. Temporary schedule. Then we come back and we're sitting there and the lights turn on. We're like, whoa, what just happened? It's like, oh, it's the vacation setting. But so I'm more impressed with the HomeKit stuff all the time.
Yep. Yeah, it's gotten much better. I've been impressed with what they've done with it. And I like that it works with more stuff. And yeah, it's all good.
Yeah. Yeah. And although it's not on its own, it used to have its own page and control center in iOS 11. It just has an icon. But, you know, you tap and hold and it pops up the whole control panel.
Right, and then you can do all the scenes and specific lights and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and so I don't think that's any less accessible because you had to swipe before and now you have to tap. But it's not really different. It's just, you know, there's a gesture and then you've got all of your HomeKit stuff in front of you.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff in there that we probably haven't even found yet.
Yeah,
I was very surprised. I found a random thing.
Finding new things.
I found a random thing yesterday, which kind of surprised me. I was paging through the settings, and I went to settings in general. I was looking for something. I can't remember what it was. Oh, yeah, I was looking for the settings for mail, like turning push off, because my battery was actually getting a little eaten up. And I scrolled down to the bottom of the settings in general. I'm not sure if this was in previous versions, but I have no recollection of ever seeing this as an option before. There's now a shutdown button in general.
Yes, that's new.
which just brings up the screen that you get if you hold down the lock button with a little slider. But I thought that was interesting because it kind of feels like something that's in there either as a sop to people who are like, I don't know how to shut down my phone. I was like, oh, there's a menu item. Or it hints at something with the buttons changing or maybe getting people less rely on the buttons. I don't know, but thought it was interesting.
Yeah, there's a bunch of little stuff like that. I've noticed a few of those things too. And it's, you poke around in the settings. I was playing with the one-handed keyboard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is, it's not just the keys. If you flip over to emoji, they'll all be clustered to one side, especially on the plus model. That is that's a really nice little feature just because if you're holding your phone in one hand and your phone's too wide and you have to stretch to reach that, and it just makes everything narrower. It's a little thing, right? But it's nice. And then, you know, there's a whole category of stuff that is not new to the world, but is nice, which is document scanning in notes and OCRing handwriting in notes, lane guidance in maps, stuff like that. That is has existed in other apps before, but now that it's in Apple's apps, it's a huge advantage. A lot of people just use Apple's apps, so for them, this is going to be their first experience doing a document scanning thing. I was explaining that to Lauren the other day because she needed to scan something in, and I said, I think I loaded Scanner Pro on her iPhone, and I just said, just use this. You don't have to pull out the document scanner if you don't want to, because you could just use this, and it generally works really well. But putting that in notes is great, because now, yeah, you know, anybody, if somebody's like, oh, I need to scan this thing and I don't have a scanner, I'm like, well, open notes.
I think we talked about maybe at some point the QR codes in camera.
On camera.
Right?
They just work.
I know the
QR feature of Android from eight years ago.
Exactly. But... right. And it's like, I think Apple tried for as long as possible to avoid making acknowledging that QR codes were a thing. But you know what? That's a nice move, and it saves the time of anybody who has to, oh, God, if we go find an app that does this, right?
Yeah.
why was that a thing?
That's so dumb.
Yep. It's nice that they're acknowledging that people, I know it's not the best thing in the world, but people do use them, and they are useful in some scenarios. So having that available is nice.
I'm trying to scan a barcode now. It's not doing it. I think it's not a supported format.
Yeah, I'm not sure I have one.
We'll get there. Yeah. But it's why not? Yeah, so it's fun. I think people are gonna really like it. I came away feeling much more positive about this. This is a really good one. There's a lot of good stuff. I'm still not sure why they maybe there's a reason we don't know now, but why the iPhone doesn't have on iPad, the dock is swipeable by swiping up, and the dock apps appear, and then you can drag them out or you can tap on them, and they don't have names anymore. They're just their icons. So I guess once it's important enough to be in the dock, you should know what the icon looks like. But that's also the case on the iPhone, which is weird because the dock doesn't behave any different on the iPhone.
Right. You can't swipe it. It doesn't do anything when you do. Yeah.
Yeah. Unless...
at least on these phones.
Yeah, the Mark Gurman report in Bloomberg last week suggests that on the high-end phone, it's using a different task management thing that is more like the iPad. So maybe it makes sense there. But when you upgrade your iPhone to iOS 11 and the labels below your apps on your dock disappear.
I did find that a little disconcerting. Not that I don't know what those apps are, but your brain is wired to see it a certain right, to expect a certain thing. And it is a little bit on the disconcerting side.
There's no other change there. It's just for consistency with other iOS devices. Dock didn't if you could flip up the dock, which they don't want because they want Control Center to have the quick access on the phone. If you flip up the dock in some scenario, or when you kick it into multitasking mode, the dock appears or something like that. But none of that is true. So
the other one that got me was that on some places, this is a little minor thing. I'm curious if anybody else caught it. If you have anything, either apps or more often folders with long names, the kerning has changed because they try to cram more of it onto the screen now. So I immediately noticed because I flipped over and I have a folder called communications or communication, and it used to be you saw communic and then it was dot 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 or something like that, and now it's communicat dot dot dot, but you can clearly see looking at that versus a shorter a folder with shorter names, that there's just less letter space. They just crammed a lot of the letters together. So it looked kind of disconcerting at first and also not super attractive, but it was just more of a thing that jumped out at me at first because it was different.
Yeah. Also, some of my apps don't work anymore.
Yeah, it's always going to happen.
QWERTY, LED football. Oh, well. Those were the days.
You can get that. You can get a whole list of them under the about screen. It tells you all your apps that have to be upgraded, and it's mostly old games.
That's it.
A few other random things in there too.
Makes me sad though.
Pickin' Time. Oh man, you still love that game. Good times.
They updated Ramp Champ though.
I know I was super excited by that. I've always enjoyed that game. Yeah. It's still pretty fun. That was like one of the first games I remember spending a lot of time on the iPhone. It's still a really good looking game.
Yeah, sure. Icon Factory, of course. Yeah,
they do good work.
All right, well, next week, big week. I'm sure we'll check in.
Big week.
Check in next Friday, maybe.
Yeah, we'll see how the week's going.
See how we survived.
Yeah.
Well, I hope everybody out there has a good keynote day, wherever they are, whatever they're doing. If they're watching Twitter, or they're watching the feed, or whatever. We'll have stuff up on Six Colors about it. I'm going to write stuff on a bunch of other sites about it and link to that. We'll do an episode of Upgrade in there somewhere that I'll post. And all the great podcasts will be talking about it. Your podcast ear holes will be full. Is that how that works? I don't know.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. But until then, on to the next thing, I think. Thanks to everybody out there for supporting Six Colors. We appreciate it. And we'll be back after many things happen between now and then. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.